Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics Podcast, where we explore politics here in the Midwest Heartland. This show is sponsored and distributed by WVIK, the flagship national public radio station in the Quad City region of Eastern Iowa and Northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and we had Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune on a couple weeks ago, kind of giving a preview of the election on the Illinois side of the river. And today, with just several days left in this seemingly endless campaign, we're going to take a look at the Iowa side, where things are more competitive. Iowa's more of a battleground state, and we've got a lot at stake here next Tuesday. And to do that with me is Kathy Obradovich, who will be familiar to some listeners here in the Quad City region. She worked for a time as a reporter for the Quad City Times, and you may also remember her as a columnist and opinion editor at the Des Moines Register. Now she's the editor of Iowa Capital Dispatch. She's got more than 30 years experience covering Iowa politics, so she knows what she's talking about. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Robin. Always great to talk to you.
So let's just start at the top and go right down. This race between President Trump and Joe Biden's really tight in Iowa. Lots of advertising. The candidates are coming to the state. How do you rate it at this point?
Too close to call, Robin. I think that we'll have a little bit more insight into where things stand when the Des Moines Register publishes its last poll, which I expect this weekend. But you look at what the candidates are doing for a clue, and Joe Biden is making his very first in-person campaign stop to Iowa on Friday. That tells me that the Biden campaign thinks that this race is in play. Mike Pence is in the state on Thursday, and of course he has been here several times, and of course the president earlier this week was just across the river in Omaha, which draws from western Iowa also, and gets into those TV markets. So I think that just judging from what the campaigns are doing, this is a close race, too close to call. And, you know, Iowa has been leaning Republican for most of the year. It's really just been in the last few weeks, in October, really, that the polls just started showing Biden being within striking distance of the president, or even leading the president within the margin of error on these polls. So, interesting, very interesting race at the top of the ticket. And, you know, I think we're seeing that as we go down the ticket as well. I've never seen so many races that are really tightly competitive as we are this year.
Drawing a lot of interest. I just looked at your Iowa Capital Dispatch, and you had some data on early voting. I mean, is this going to be some of them? I've seen some people talking about huge turnouts. Is this going to break some kind of record there, or what do you
think?
Oh,
I think so. I think so. Blockbuster, I think. You know, we've got more than 815,000 people as of yesterday who had already cast their ballots by absentee. You know, that is well over the 2016 mark. And some county auditors, like up in Woodbury County, which is the Sioux City area, are telling us that they expect to break their records even from 2012, which was a huge year for absentee voting. So I do think that Iowa will set a record for absentee voting. Iowa did set records for early voting, absentee voting in the June primary also. So, county auditors dealing with huge volumes of ballots. And the state did allow county auditors to start counting ballots, like literally counting them as opposed to just opening the envelopes and that kind of thing, counting ballots starting on Monday, the day before the election. So hopefully that will avoid at least serious delays in counting those ballots. Typically, they're not allowed to start counting until Election Day.
So I 4 years ago, we had a Libertarian candidate on a ballot. Evan McMillan was on the ballot. There was really a high proportion of voters who voted other than for candidates other than the two-party candidates. Are there any dynamics? I'm not even sure. Is the Libertarian candidate on a ballot in Iowa? I know there's a Green Party candidate. Are there any dynamics where any of those candidates are catching fire that could impact what could be a close race at the presidential level?
There are always third-party candidates on the ballot, and there are this year. But really, the only person who has tried to mount a campaign and sent out some press releases is Joe Jorgensen in the presidential race, and I have seen her show up on a few polls, not in Iowa, with, you know, low single digits, which in a, you know, tight race could make a difference in some areas. Really not seeing much of that in Iowa, however.
Okay. We've talked about it before, about Iowa. Almost, it was a classic battleground state for many years, and it was shifting more Republican, as you mentioned. But this last, in 2018, a couple of Democrats were elected to Congress, but yet Republicans did very well in the statewide offices. It looks like it wants to lean red, but there's a lot at stake here where this could shift over. What's caused that shift to the red, do you think? And what may be causing, Iowa to move back, Democratic if it does so Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, there are a variety of factors. One is just the rural nature of the state and the fact that the rural people, rural areas, have started to lean a lot more heavily toward Republican. And so I think that that has something to do with it. If there's a swing back, however, I think it might have something to do with, in part, the shift of population. If you look at how many people in Iowa are still living in rural areas versus how many have migrated to urban, suburban, and exurban areas, I think that that has something to do with it. I think that the fact that women are largely abandoning President Trump and to some extent the Republican Party, especially in metro and suburban locales, suburban and some places exurban areas, you have, women definitely shifting away from that. Healthcare is one of the big issues and one of those reasons why. And, of course, COVID plays right into that healthcare issue. So I think that there are demographic issues, and then there are also, I think, issues and et cetera that are, and, you know, Donald Trump himself, I think, has turned off more women just because of his behavior and how he's handled the COVID crisis. So that's part of it also.
One of the interesting things, you mentioned women. One of the interesting things about Iowa this year is that you've got two women running for the U.S. Senate, and you've also got two congressional races with women candidates representing the major two major parties. This Greenfield Ernst race, it's kind of a surprise to me that it's competitive. I would have thought, I think most people thought starting out that Senator Ernst would be in a strong position to win re-election, but this thing's really tight. What's the latest on the polls that you're seeing, and what's caused this race to be more competitive? Is it all about the competitive nature of the national race?
That's part of it. Joni Ernst has been pretty much in lockstep with President Trump, as have other Republican office holders and leaders in the state. And that may be hurting her at this point, especially among female voters. If you look at her numbers, she's tracking fairly similarly to President Trump, especially when it comes to the gender gap. Teresa Greenfield, the last poll I saw that had, that I recall the breakdown, was from earlier this fall, but Teresa Greenfield was leading with women by about 18 points over Joni Ernst, and that matters a lot. But it's not just President Trump, and it is possible that Biden could win Iowa and Joni Ernst could win also, or vice versa. You know, people in Iowa are kind of known for splitting their tickets. They might hedge their bets by saying, okay, I can't vote for President Trump this time, but I will vote for Joni Ernst again, or vice versa. So that's a possibility, but there have been a couple of unforced errors by Joni Ernst this just in the last month or so that also I think have hurt her. One was that she announced that she was skeptical of COVID-19 death data and actually suggested that medical personnel in Iowa were taking advantage of the fact that, the CARES Act was paying more for COVID cases through reimbursement. And that really offended a lot of medical personnel and others. She ended up apologizing for that remark. So that was an unforced error. And then the other one was in a recent televised debate where the candidates were asked about commodity prices, and Joni Ernst did not know the break-even price for soybeans in Iowa. And that, at least according to some journalists from the western side of the state, said that that really turned off farmers as well. So she, if she struggles, there may be some reasons other than Donald Trump. On the other hand, people know her. They know her very well. She spends a lot of time out in the state. And Teresa Greenfield has been knocked, mainly because of COVID, I think, but possibly because Democrats have used their rare public appearance time in this time of COVID to go where they're more certain of doing well. And so Teresa Greenfield's been knocked for not getting out in the state as much as she could have.
I live in Illinois where I get the Quad City Media Market, so I get to see the inundation of TV ads for Ernst and Greenfield, and it's just nonstop, and it's been that way pretty much since I think late June is when it started. We both talked, been around politics a long time, and I get this every 4 years or every 2 years, you know, these negative ads, we're just tired of them, and people tune them out, but yet there's evidence that they do work. But at this point, I mean, it almost seems, I know when I see them on, and again, I'm really close to this and you are too, but I just don't even pay attention to them. There's no creativity in them. Do those ads, you think, still have value in influencing voters? I mean, it seems to me that it would almost make people just turned off and say, forget it, I'm not voting for either one.
Yeah, well, that's part of the strategy. In fact, there is certain strategy of turning out voters. If you believe that your candidate will do better in a lower turnout election, then running negative ads to actually try to tamp down the vote might be part of the strategy. The other thing is there's research that suggests that negative ads are as effective or even more effective if you're not actively paying attention, right? People tune out the ads, but they still absorb the message. The problem is that you're absorbing the message without any critical thinking going along with it. So you might not think you're paying attention to those ads, but you might absorb the main message and be persuaded by them anyway. So those ads are really insidious. People who have their DVRs can just fast forward past them and not watch them at all. But the rest of us do end up, absorbing those ads in some way or another.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm really interesting that you mentioned that in this era of partisanship where everybody's voting the same way, pretty much Republican or Democrat. Less ticket splitting, but I'm thinking too that we may get different results at the top of the ticket in Senate. Just a hunch I have. Down ballot, we've got four competitive races in Iowa for the four congressional seats, which is refreshing. In Illinois, of course, we have partisan gerrymandering where we don't have as many competitive races, but no matter where you live in Iowa, you've got a competitive race. Let's start with the one right here, where you've got an open seat where, two candidates running in an area of the state that's changed a lot, both from an economic base with a lot of factories closing here, as you know, along the river counties. It's also most of these counties are Obama-Trump counties. What are the dynamics you're looking for that may help decide this race between Rita Hart and Marionette Miller Meeks?
Well, you're right that district has changed a lot. It used to be considered kind of a Democratic stronghold. The rural areas again have gotten more Republican. You saw the kind of effect of blue collar, non-college educated and white men in particular, leaning Republican and toward Donald Trump. So it has gotten to be a friendlier district for Republicans. Marionette Miller Meeks, she's run three times, she has an interesting background. She's a state senator. Rita Hart, former state senator. Rita Hart was the Democratic vice or lieutenant governor nominee in the last cycle. So she's got campaign experience as well and a fundraising base. It is a very close race. I think probably the closest in the state at this point. In part because it's an open seat, in part because of the dynamic of who the candidates are. So that one we'll be watching closely. I mean, obviously you look at where the most populist areas, are leaning, population areas are leaning, I should say. But it starts to be a dynamic sort of like we have in the third district where it's Polk County and then there's everywhere else. The Democrat has to win the urban areas by great big margins in order to overcome the vote in the rural areas that are going Republican. And the second district is becoming more like that dynamic, I believe.
Yeah, and the third over there in your neck of the woods, it's a rematch from 2 years ago. Cindy Axne won, and that's kind of an interesting one there as well. I haven't seen as much about that one, quite frankly, as I have some of the other races in Iowa. It's been a little bit quiet, although you probably may have a different opinion living over there.
Yeah, well, Axne has had a big lead in fundraising. There's not a lot of polls in the congressional races, but the ones that I've seen look good for Cindy Axne for her reelection, which is really interesting considering that David Young is pretty well known, having served in two terms in that seat. But I get the feeling with him that he's just not been able to generate a lot of excitement among Republicans after he lost in 2018, and that he's not the kind of Republican bomb thrower that really helps, gin up conservatives. He's more of a moderate, which matches the district, but I don't think it has really gotten Republicans excited behind his campaign. So it looks to me like Axne, is in good shape there. It looks to me like it's a little bit closer up in the first district, but it looks like Abby Finkenauer has been leading in those polls up there. The incumbency is powerful in Iowa. It continues to be Iowa's, they don't give up the office holders that they have very easily. Oftentimes when it comes down to flip a coin, that coin flips on the side of the incumbent.
Another open seat is out in the western part of the state where you talk about bomb throwers earlier. Steve King was defeated in the Republican primary. His opponent, J.D. Scholten, came close 2 years ago, and I think the idea is that he'd be running again, but this one, it doesn't seem as close as it was 2 years ago out there.
No, but it's closer than it was right after the primary. Randy Feenstra, state senator, he's very, very conservative as Steve King, I would say, but he's not, one to deliberately provoke people like Steve King like to do. So he's much quieter, and more reserved. And I think that to the extent that the race has been getting closer this fall, it has been blamed in part on the idea that Randy Feenstra is not getting out enough around the district, not appearing in person, not meeting a lot of voters. They only had one televised debate in that race. which I think was a mistake on Feenster's part, because J.D. Shulton, while very good at connecting with voters in that rural district, not a great debater. So Feenster could have maybe gained some more ground if he had done more debates. J.D. Shulton, on the other hand, been everywhere. He's met everyone. He's running a pretty moderate campaign that's focused on agricultural issues, which is good for that district. Things like antitrust in the ag industry, which is something that even Chuck Grassley really supports. So I still expect Republicans have a huge registration advantage in that district. Last I heard, it was, approaching 80,000 and, or 77,000, something like that. And so it's really hard for any Democrat to win. But because J.D. Shulton came so close last time, there are some Republicans who have voted for him in the past. And if Feenster hasn't come around to ask for the vote, it's possible that some of them will vote for Shulton again.
In addition to all those critical federal races, as if that wasn't enough, there's a very important races going on also for the state legislature, especially in the Iowa House. Republicans control the governorship in Iowa and both houses of the legislature. Is there a chance for a change of control of either house this cycle?
There's a chance in the House. The all of the House seats are up for re-election every 2 years, and so you don't have a situation like we have in the Senate where, you pretty much are shut out of the opportunity for the other party to take control, in certain cycles. And I would, generally speaking, the Senate is not in play. The House is in play. It's hard to generalize because there's all these individual candidates running their individual races. But there has been TV advertising in some of these races, which is interesting. And there is a lot at stake. We've had a number of cycles now with triumvirate control by Republicans. And part of the consequence of that is not enough oversight over the governor, over spending, over programs. And so I think that one of the issues that we're gonna see, regardless of who wins, is maybe the legislature stepping up a little bit more for oversight. We've seen issues, for example, of money being spent through the Federal CARES Act, coronavirus relief, that the feds are now saying, no, you can't spend money for that. So I think that's just one consequence. You've got environmental issues, you've got tax policy, you've got a lot of issues that are really up in the air until we know who's controlling the legislature.
Well, you've done an excellent job, as always, Kathy, of giving a good overview of what's all the races, all the important races for Tuesday night. My final question is, Tuesday night, you and I, I'm sure you'll be there with several pages open on your computer looking, trying to look for things. I'll be doing the same thing. But for our listeners out there, what are you going to be looking at, a specific race or a specific county, to kind of give clues to who's going to win before everybody else knows? I mean, what are you going to be looking at specifically for a deeper look, to kind of let us know ahead of time who's doing well and who may not be?
Well, so first of all, I think that patience is the watchword for Tuesday night. The tea leaf reading and the kinds of things that we often try to do, are dangerous. And, you look at even the networks, are being ultra cautious in terms of how soon they're going to call races and what information they're going to be using to call races. Everybody's trying to encourage their readers and viewers and listeners that just because something is slow does not mean that there's a problem. It doesn't mean that that it's just going to take a long time to count votes because it's going to be a massive turnout. So the idea that we're going to try to get ahead of everybody else to say somebody's winning or whatever. I think it's just not advisable. So, but, you know, having said that, I mean, I think we look for things that we always look for. You know, where's the turnout? You know, how much are people here in Iowa turning out, for example, in Polk County? What's it look like in Linn County? What's it look like in some of the typical Republican strongholds? And, you know, what is turnout like on election day versus absentee voting? So, you know, if we've got this record absentee vote, which leans heavily to Democrats, are we also going to have record turnout in person on election day, which will be better, which means it's better for Republicans? So, you know, I think that those are kinds of things that we'll be watching on Tuesday.
Yeah, it'll be exciting, and I think Iowa again is in the center of the national attention for who's gonna win the presidency, the control of the U.S. Senate, the House, and as you laid out, the importance of control of the state legislature. So again, as always, Kathy, you did a marvelous job. I appreciate it laying out in very clear terms what's at stake and kind of what's going on in Iowa, and I look forward to talking to you down the road. We can look back and see what happened and interpret all of it. But
see how right or wrong we were.
Yeah. That's. I think it's going to be really interesting. But thank you again, Kathy. Kathy Obradovich has been our guest today. She's the editor of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. And Kathy, thanks for taking the time. I know it's been really busy for you.
Well, thanks for having me, Robin. And everybody, please do get out and vote.
Thank you.